Good evening, David Refkin here with the Ragtime Machine. This is music from the concert halls and barrooms of America. Tonight on the Ragtime Machine, we'll have our own guest here, alive and well, Stephanie Trick, who's one of the bright stars of the younger set from St. Louis, recent graduate of the University of Chicago. Well, I'll let her tell her story in just a little bit. We'll have some recordings of hers. She has records, and then she redid her records, so she's got two sets going on here. And I have both versions. Hear from her revised Ragtime Tricks CD, and her last name is Trick, and spelled like Trick, so I think all of her CDs and all of her productions and everything is going to make use of that. Ragtime Tricks. These two particular tricks are Gershwin's Rialto Ripples and Joplin's Peacherine Rag. Give you a start in listening to her music before we bring her in for an interview. I played the slightest hint. I remember a couple of weeks ago at the tail end of a program, just a little trick ending to the program, if you will. So here's the here are complete things. I promise. Unless the CD player disagrees with me. Rialto Ripples, Peacherine Rag, and then, not quite live, but in person, whatever that means, Stephanie Trick.
Ragtime Machine, I'm David Refkin with a guest new to this program, but not new to the ragtime world, well known in Sacramento at West Coast Festival, and now at Sedalia, and Stephanie Trick. Welcome to it.
Thank you, David.
Ragtime pianist, and are you a bit of a researcher, too?
I'm mostly a performer.
Yeah. Are you sort of learning certain composers that are favorites of yours? You work objectively, try to learn them all.
No, I definitely have my favorites. Fats Waller, James T. Johnson, Willie the Lion Smith are some of my favorites.
You know, in days past, it would have been very unusual for a young person, young being probably about under 40, to say some of my favorites, Fats Waller, James T. Johnson. Usually it was, you know, James Scott, Joe Lamb, Joplin Rags. Things have progressed in teaching of ragtime and the definition of ragtime. Because now you're already talking about stride piano.
Exactly. Yep.
And you have hands for stride piano?
I mean, I could always ask for bigger hands, but I'm happy with the hands I've got.
You trade these in, get some new ones, yeah. Well, tell me, first of all, I know there must be some transition point between when you started doing piano lessons and getting into sort of
exactly,
music.
Yeah.
But what was it that really was the one event or the one person or the one moment when you decided these charity exercises can only go so far? Mm-hmm. I really want to do something a little more hip. What was it that turned down the ragtime?
Well, I have to say that there were two turning points. One of them was when I went to the West Coast Ragtime Festival in 2006 for the first time. And I had been playing ragtime for a few years and had learned the Carolina Shout, which was my first stride piano piece. And when I saw some of the stride pianists at the West Coast Festival playing together and just watching the style performed live really changed a lot for me, and I was totally hooked then. And then in 2008, I had the opportunity to travel to a small town in Switzerland for a stride and swing piano summit. And there were five wonderful stride pianists from Europe and the U.S., and they were just performing at such an incredible level, and they were all so nice to me, and just talking about this music and how to be authentic by listening to it and learning from these recordings of Fats Waller and all the other old masters, that just, for me, sold it. And from that point, I kind of turned completely to ragtime, traditionalist jazz, stride.
There's a real important message there for anybody who maybe has kids who want to learn how to do this stuff for the next few years. Is listening to the old recordings.
Exactly.
That step sort of gets skipped by a lot of people who read the music or maybe listen to some other modern players play those stuff. But it really started off in another era that we don't live in.
Right.
Fortunately, we have these old recordings. So do you collect records?
I do, yes. People just send them to me, and I'm starting to have a better collection than I had even just a couple of years ago. And if it weren't for the generosity and kindness of people, other pianists, who saw that I should listen more, you know, they told me that you really have to listen to this music to understand it and to get the feeling, I might have just been another ragtime player and not really understood where this music came from.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Knowing the history, it's kind of, there are subtleties, too. Knowing the lyrics to some songs, knowing the town that the tune was written in, or maybe the special circumstances that a composer worked in. All of this contributes to how you're intuitive about the music, about playing it.
Yeah.
That's a very important lesson. Did you go to study music at school?
I did. I went to the University of Chicago and received a Bachelor of Arts in Music, although it was more of an academic degree than a performance.
So you know quite well about the importance of studying the history of music and comparing forms and all that.
I mean, with dry piano, it's you know, you can't really approach it too seriously. Because it was performed, and a lot of these songs are almost like jokes, and they're always doing it with a twinkle in their eye, and that's the way that it should be performed now, not like serious concert music. It's entertainment.
She says, after having witnessed a concert of Rags and Stride, do you think these concerts in Sibelius are too serious?
Oh, no. I think they're great. I mean, the performers are incredible.
I think there have been some, and I take exception to some of these classical players, and I open up CD booklets, and in the back has their credit, and they've won every Tchaikovsky Prize and everything there is to win in the academic concert world.
Mm-hmm.
And they're reading down 21 rags for the sake of a recording.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
They read Graham. Sure, they're, you know, wonderful sight readers.
Mm-hmm.
And I can appreciate that, but it doesn't sound like ragtime, does it?
Not always. I mean, sometimes they have it, but it's really about the spirit of it. And you just have to be able to feel it through their playing. And sometimes
it's very much the same. I think some of these people don't appreciate that if some a really good stride player who happens to be able to read music took Bach's Sonata and read through music like that and
right.
made a CD, and that was it, it wouldn't have much life either in that sense.
Right.
It would be wrongly interpreted. So
I never thought about that, but that's a great point.
Well, I have mentioned this to some players. I'm not a pianist, I'm a violinist.
Mm-hmm.
But I've known a lot of pianists over the years who have read down these rags. Some of them very good at it. That's the way they start, and then they, like you, they start listening and they'll wake up to it. Sometimes they never get it.
Mm-hmm. It really was an awakening when I started delving into these old recordings. And also, I listen a lot to more contemporary pianists like Ralph Sutton and Dick Hyman and Dick Wellstead, and it's just amazing what they've done, because they've taken it to a different level. You know, they've put their own stuff into this music.
Yeah, well, Dick Hyman himself, he's a category different than human being.
Right.
He's completely some other organism. We haven't quite figured out yet. This is a fellow, in case the members of our audience aren't familiar with him, who can sit in a recording studio and just wait for somebody to tell him, okay, sound like this, and do 4.5 minutes,
right,
and then go home. And that's what he does, and he goes home.
Uh-huh.
And they send him a lot of money for that.
Yes.
So it sounds like somewhere along the way you skipped the sort of building blocks of classic rags, or did you just go through that really fast?
No, I had my I went through it in stages like that. I started playing classical music when I was 5, and then when I was in middle school, my piano teacher wanted to expose me to ragtime, and I'm from St. Louis, so she thought that was natural to do that. And I entered into some ragtime competitions, and I lost like 3 times or something. And then in high school, she thought to give me the Carolina Shout, and then I said,
Wait.
Oh.
How does the piano teacher just think to give a young student Carolina Shout, a piece most pianists someday aspire to be able to take a look at?
Well. I just kept bugging her about learning more, and I wanted to play something more challenging. So she said, "I don't know what to give you. Here, take this James T. Johnson piece." I said, "Okay." So a few weeks later, I came back, and she said, "Okay, you should join this competition." And
are you rather fearless as a person overall?
I don't know, but it was. I think it's just fun. I love this music, so.
Yeah, it's fun, and it's nice to love the music, but Stephanie, most people aren't actually able to play it. You seem to be able to play it quite well.
Oh, thank you.
And you are obviously gifted to begin with, but also you've been pointed in the right direction early on by a number of people.
Mm-hmm. I am so grateful to all those people.
You're very lucky. I want to credit this teacher of yours, because it's always interesting to me who these teachers are. Who is this you're speaking of?
Oh, this is a pianist, Diane Ceccarini, and she does a lot of the Broadway shows in St. Louis, and I really enjoyed taking from her. I started when I was 5 and continued until I went away to college. So that was 13 years with her. And she had me start with classical, so I had the good technical background, and then ragtime, and then pop, and some jazz songs. But she just really was open-minded about the kind of music she let me play.
Now, Trevor Tischner's son is a trumpet player. His first call, I think, trumpet in all those Broadway shows that come to St. Louis. Like, mm-hmm. Are you aware of him? Do you know
yes,
him?
Yes.
Yeah, a little bit of a secondary connection.
Oh, yes.
Somebody who's from a ragtime dynasty.
Mm-hmm. And Virginia Tischner was, I got to meet her 5 years ago through her father, who was the judge for these ragtime competitions that I entered into.
Some things never change. When I first came to the first year of Sedalia, we had a ragtime contest, which I was in, a string contest, mm-hmm. and Trevor was a judge. That's that too. This is a long time, it's 1974. A fixture, as we say. I'm talking with Stephanie Trick, long at last. Great pleasure to meet you.
Thank you.
The Ragtime Machine, David Refkin, and we are at one of the so-called afterglow hours of Sedalia, discussing the finer points of just falling naturally into being one of the few people in the world that can play the most difficult pop music from the 19-teens and 20s. Going back to the ragtime, just straight classic rags, do you enjoy playing those still, or are they too boring for you?
I enjoy them. I think they're very beautiful. I just am working really hard to master this style that developed in the 20s, the stride style, and I'm really devoting most of my time to that.
I've talked to people over the years who started in ragtime, or even earlier. They were playing sort of simpler salon pieces of the 1870s and 80s, little waltzes and things. They got interested in that stuff. And then they worked their way up to the ragtime, and they sort of progressed chronologically. Their interest kept changing, so they discovered, oh, here's what it turned into. Mm-hmm. Do you have a feeling like you're going to be someday catching up to yourself, up to the current pop music?
I don't think I'll catch up to the pop music of today, ever.
Good.
Yeah.
but the forms like Boogie Woogie...
Several months ago, I started getting into Boogie Woogie, and I really like that style of playing. And a lot of the pianists I know, they start off with boogie and then they go another direction. So it's kind of interesting, but I developed this interest after I started playing stride.
Well, at some point, you come up against the improvisation factor, mm-hmm. where most of the jazz is really created out of your mind, having a basis in all this other music, but mm-hmm. The melodies and bits and things are just sort of composing and improvising all at the same time, mm-hmm. and it becomes sort of a modern jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think you'll ever get quite to that?
I don't know how modern I'll get, but I really would like to be become fluent. I think of this style as an idiom, and you have to become fluent in speaking that language. And I think that there's a lot of blues and boogie influences and stride, and I think that helps with the improvisational aspect. But I don't know how. I really like the swing style of the 30s, like Teddy Wilson, and I love that improvisational style.
Do you practice improvising? Sounds like a dumb question, but
I do. I practice it, but you know, it's so hard to get away from the recordings because they're just so perfect, and so it's like my goal to play like them. But at the same time, you have to sound like yourself too.
This is one of the great forks in the road you have to make at some point when to break away. It's really important, like I said, to listen to those recordings, but then you've got to be you.
Right.
Have you found your own voice in the music yet, do you think?
Starting to, yes. Yeah.
So you won't grow up to be one of these very old people who's listening back to early recordings and not even being sure, oh, was that me or not?
Oh, God.
UB Blake was a little bit like that, you know, because there were a lot of people who copied UB. Mm-hmm. And when he got to be in his 90s, I'm talking old, you think, geez, did I write that tune?
Yeah.
I don't remember that. Well, I guess if they say I did, my name's on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's, like you say, he's got a wink in the eye, too. But at some point, he's just so much. He went through, kept reinventing himself.
Mm-hmm.
But he did exactly the same thing you did, only a century earlier. You know, he sort of lived through those eras.
Right.
And progressed. Aside from now learning this music and going to festivals and so forth, do you have an interest, I guess, in teaching?
Well, I like going to elementary schools and talking to them about ragtime and early forms of jazz. And I found it that the response from these elementary and middle school students is really positive. And they just have never heard of these styles before. But when they hear it, because I demonstrate it as well as talk about the history, they just get so excited. And I think that in order for this music to continue being performed and to continue having audiences, you really need to expose younger people to it.
Yeah, it's one thing for somebody who's sort of one of the great veterans of the business, like Max Mirath, or people of his age or younger, to go into a school and sort of demonstrate what they do.
Mm-hmm.
It's another thing for you, who are much closer in age to these kids,
mm-hmm.
to do it, because they will identify with you in the first place when you walk in,
mm-hmm.
and really listen to what you're telling them.
Yes, I feel like similarity in age really allows me to relate to them more, because you know, if they see someone just a few years older than they are playing this and enjoying it, then they might ask themselves, what's, you know, this music isn't so different after all, and it does have things that they can enjoy.
So you're not afraid of some parent calling you up and going, what is this I hear about you influencing my kids? I paid all this money for classical lessons.
Okay.
What do you think you're doing?
They can do both.
Yeah, they can do both. Open the door. Stephanie Trick is here, who is from St. Louis. Well, thereabouts from St. Louis,
mm-hmm.
these days. And is there some place, if our people are listening on the internet who live everywhere, if they come to where you are, is there some place they can reliably hear you on a regular basis?
Well, I tour around a lot, and my schedule is constantly changing, and more things are being added to it. And the listeners can check out my website, which is stephanietricks.com, and that has my performance schedule as well as ways you can contact me.
And you have recordings.
Yes, yes.
Do you have a new recording?
I do. This recording came out 3 days ago.
Ah.
And it's called Ragtime Tricks. And Sedalia is the first place that I have brought the CD.
Well, I hope the Ragtime Machine will be the next place that you send the copy.
That can be done.
I have the first thing that you have recorded, of course.
Oh, yes.
I hope that stands up to your own test. So you still like to hear that recording?
Piano Tricks?
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, I did that as a high school senior project.
Ladies and gentlemen, she made a recording as part of a senior project. A recording on a little one-page paper with typos, a project. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well,
I guess your class was impressed.
It was fun. It was kind of, it was a good way to prepare for what I'm doing now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that was one of my first questions, was about research. It sounds like you already have done a bit of research and listening and collecting those records, but do you think you're going to get interested in maybe contributing articles or doing some literary kind of work?
Probably, if I find a niche that hasn't really been explored fully yet. But, you know, there are so many great historians of this music as well as performers at these festivals. I'm just so impressed with... And they're young, too!
Yay. Yay for youth. I've talked to a lot of people in this program.
I can see that.
And are you going to be making a living as a musician?
Yes, yes. When I went to this summit in Switzerland, I said to myself, I can't do anything else but play this music, because it's American. I mean, there's so many reasons why I like it. It's American music, and it makes people happy. They start tapping their feet when they hear it, even if they don't even know what it is. It just touches something in people. And I really want to make people happy with what I do, and this is how I can do that.
Well, so many of us start with that and try to keep to it. It's a difficult challenge after a while.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot of work, being in any of the arts.
Mm-hmm.
But there is that fine line, not to in any way discourage you, but this is, as you know, tough times for musicians and even people who are not musicians trying to get a successful career going. You have the advantage of a lot of new technology, which creates, you put up a website, you're known everywhere.
Right.
You know, this is not true until recent times.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. This music instantly makes people happy. It turns them on. It gets them interested in music.
Mm-hmm.
It causes them to go out and maybe buy a CD or something, and maybe even start learning to play.
Right.
But then there's that wall of, well, okay, how do you get them to hire you?
Mm-hmm.
The people who can hire you are the ones who really need to, you know, to really get tickled by this stuff.
Right.
Do you have a plan for this?
Well, there seems to be an interest in private house parties.
Yes.
And that is really good for musicians.
That's a San Francisco phenomenon, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you have done that particular route yet.
I will.
Yeah, you will.
In November.
Oh, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Good for you. All right, just another advance notice to the audience. Stephanie's coming to town.
Yes.
Right, well, I hope you guys put it up in lights when you're going to be there.
Fill the house.
Publicly, yeah, fill the house, literally. But you're right, small venues,
mm-hmm.
little houses. There was a festival for a couple of years in Savannah, Georgia, which was almost entirely produced in people's houses. A lot of it was house concerts. And there was a boat. A paddle wheel boat, and we did some of the concerts down there. It was pretty creative way to market a festival.
Mm.
But filling a hall with 2,000 people or a stadium with 50,000 people, those days are kind of over. Do you have creative ideas about doing something for music that most musicians don't do?
I'm just taking it as it comes right now.
So you're not thinking like stage shows and things like that. It's more complicated.
I'm not sure I would say they're complicated. I just want to present the music in an interesting way and have people go away knowing something more about this time period. And
when you go to a concert, say a mixture of rags and stride pieces,
mm-hmm.
let's for the moment say it's just all pianos, what do you look for? What are you trying to be attuned to, really specifically? I know you're trying to learn from these players and see how they do it.
Mm-hmm.
But what gets your attention?
Oh, okay. What I really like to see in a piano concert, is that what your question is?
Mm-hmm.
Is having a balance of, you know, really great showstoppers and then also slower pieces. Just pieces that are pleasant to listen to and just to enjoy it. Because I think that one of the problems with ragtime and stride is that a lot of these pieces are just so many notes and so fast, and after a while the listener can't take anymore. So I look for balance in the presentation.
Do you like the idea of the way it's usually done, sort of talking about these things between the tunes?
Yes, as long as it doesn't get too repetitive or too, you know, following a pattern.
You're easily bored, I guess.
Yeah. No, I'm just thinking of the audience, you know.
Yeah, who often are easily bored. Yeah.
You got to entertain them. I mean, it's good to talk about the history, but in the end, if it's not entertaining, they're not going to want to come back.
Yeah, well, what's the point of doing that? Do you work with other instruments or singers or anything like that?
I'm starting to.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about it.
But, I mean, for the most part, I'm a solo pianist.
Would you like to have a little ensemble of...
I would. I would like to. It's just a matter of meeting the right people.
Yeah. Are there people in St. Louis who, besides pianists, people who play other instruments that you've met at all who have any interest in this stuff?
There are some Dixie bands. It's hard to hear them because they do private functions. But there are several.
You have to crash the parties in order to do
this. Right, right. I have to crash more parties.
You must have Dave Mazak.
Back in high school, I think.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty... funny guy.
Yes, very energetic.
And so to learn music an untraditional way, he's a great sight reader.
Mm.
But his technique sort of had to get caught up to his what he wanted to be able to play. Mm. And now I consider him one of the finest accompanists that I've ever had.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
Great.
Absolutely. And I've fired I've had a lot of accompanists, a lot of people who work with me, and some very good ones. But Dave is exceptional.
Well, I look forward to hearing your set.
Well, you missed them.
You did all of them already?
Yeah. Uh-oh. Look up, look in the face. Next year.
After hours, maybe?
Well, actually, you know, I travel. You go where there's a piano waiting for you. And I used to travel with my violin. But since the airline rules all changed, I don't take my instrument with me because I don't want to be having to check through.
You know? Oh, that'd be awful.
Terrible. I couldn't have it. So I arrive here, and I borrow an instrument from a music store. A nice instrument, but it's not my instrument. You know, So I finished my set. I'm done. That instrument went back.
Oh, no.
Next year.
There will be more festivals.
There will. Or you come to San Francisco. When you come to San Francisco.
Yes.
Maybe I'll have a gig you can crash.
Oh, I'd love to.
When times get better, because you're going to create all our new audiences. Encouraging all these kids. And having them go around and encouraging other friends. And then when we have an audience again, and the economy is good, we'll credit all this to you and bring back the music business. See, this is a great future you
and
have.
And musicians can all work 40 hours a week.
That's
doing
right.
What they love.
That's right. And take, oh, it's got to include vacations and work, though.
Okay.
Right. You work on that plan. Wow, we just networked or something. Well, good luck.
Thank you, David.
A Stephanie Trick. The Ragtime Machine, KOSF, and around the world on the internet, and I'll be back.
Complete with trick ending. Maybe that's what got her the prize. That's Carolina Shout, the tune we were talking about. That's kind of difficult for most people, but apparently for Stephanie Trek, it's just another tune to learn. And that's how she played it in high school. Recorded 2004. James P. Johnson tune. The other tunes after Rialto Ripples and Petrine Rag were Robin Frost's Grease Lightning and Intoxication by John Novacek. And, of course, Maple Leaf Rag just a little while ago. Stephanie Trick from St. Louis. This is the Ragtime Machine. I'm David Refkin. This is the Ragtime Radio Program, and there are rags played here on...
This is 90.3 FM, KUSF, San Francisco.